The following programming is sponsored by Pete Trabuco. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or Peasley Media Group.
And welcome to another edition of Live on Tape with Pete Trabuco at WWDB AM 860 Talk Radio, Philadelphia, a Beasley Media Group station. Yes, the city of brotherly love, and we're the number one talk station in Philadelphia, so we're so happy about that accolade. I'm here with, of course, Tyler Conklin, our producer, and, of course, our co-host, and that would be Yaron Urbas, who basically is not in the studio, but we definitely want him on as a co-host because he does a great job, even when he's on the road, doing all the things that he does, acting-wise and so on down the line. This is the Christmas show. We are 4 days away from Christmas. Okay, and of course, Hanukkah is right here too as well. Celebration time. I don't know what you're doing, but I can tell you right now, I still have looked at my Christmas list, and I still have got a million presents to get. And like I said the week before, I'm just going to go to the store real quick, and I'm just going to start throwing stuff in the cart, and then figure out what to get later on. So that's what I'm going to do. And I think I spoke to Yaron about that. He's more methodical when it comes to that. So, Yaron, what are you doing again to get past this?
I mean, first of all, holiday shopping for me is one word, Amazon.
Oh, there you go.
So that, right? I mean, I don't know how I did it before. I remember being a kid. I mean, I'm not observant, but I am Jewish, but we used to have a Hanukkah bush in my house, and my kids are, because my ex is Catholic, so my kids, grew up with a Christmas tree. But the holidays, I used to love going shopping in the stores. That was awesome. I used to love that experience. And it's a shame young people don't get that experience. Going to Toys R Us, and buying the toys and playing with them. But anyway, I'm spending time with the family. I'm looking forward to the holidays.
That's great. Like I said, I get a little nervous at this point because, whatever I buy my wife, for example, I have got to get a receipt because I'll tell you, I am batting like 100 out of 1,000. For every 10 guests, gifts I give, 9 of them have to go back. So bottom line is I always keep the receipts because I know for a fact I don't know how we're married 37 years. Because we seem to don't know each other when it comes to gifts. So bottom line is we either re-gift it or basically I just, I've given up. I have a daughter. She's 28 now. God bless her. She's fantastic. And she's a hell of an actress too, as well as other things that she does. But I'll tell you, whenever I want to go shopping now, I'm smart. What I do is I have her come along. Okay, you're with mom. You're with mom. You tell me what she wants. Okay, and we'll go from there. So, basically that's how we're doing that. But now we have a fantastic guest. Let me tell you about our guest. He's just an amazing Frank M. Callow, seasoned film producer, director, writer, over 30 years in the business. In fact, he's done everything, multiple genres, including theater, film, reality TV episodes, documentaries. He has worked with people like Robert De Niro, Madonna, Demi Moore, Mike Myers, Shelley Winters, Marlon Brando, Queen Latifah, Danny Glover, and many, 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 many more. And he's just a very, very busy guy. The movies he has is just amazing, and the stuff that he's done, and we'll talk about that. But welcome to the show, Frank. How are you, sir?
Well, I'm fine. Thank you so much for having me, and Merry Christmas to you. Yaron is a good friend of mine. And to all your audience base, Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah. God bless you all.
Thank you so much. Yeah, Yaron is actually an amazing person. I mean, I've known him now for several years, and I'll tell you, what a hell of an actor he is, too, as well. As a producer, you got to get him in some of your shows. You know what I mean?
Did he tell you that we did a play together?
No, I did not know that.
I know with him, his work from other young filmmakers that we know that he's worked with in the past. And I was introduced to him by that group. And there was always something special about him. And then I never really worked with him. I worked on him. We did a little project together. I put this one jacket on him. This was a small project. I put a jacket on him. And everybody said, man, I look like the village people in this jacket. I said, yeah, you're right. Take it off. So then we went on. Then we went on to do this play that was, it's a wonderful play by a wonderful playwright. Her name's Eve Letterman, who I'm still working with. And I'll get more into that later. But we did a play off Broadway play at the Theater for New City back in 2019, and we were with the goal of pushing it to off Broadway.
Uh-huh.
But we also, and we're at that level of working it and working the script and working. It was a great ensemble, so we cast Yaron as one of the leading men in it, and I really grew to respect his work so much because he's a natural actor. That's as a director, that's what I look for. I don't believe directors should go in there. We're not teachers. I'm not going to here to teach you the role. I want you to do your own homework so I could do my homework. And we meet at the stage or in the film or rehearsal hall, and then we put it all together, because the more they contribute, the more I can contribute and take them on another level. As a director, I sometimes know where I want them to go, and they still have to get to that point from the beginning. So I have to be patient.
Yeah.
And sometimes, like with great actors like Yaron, and we had Lonnie Ackerman, who was in the Vita. She replaced Patti LuPone in Vita and the National Tour. She was the original girl in the Cats, who sang that song Memory. And we had Joe Bonino. We had Francesca Calla, my daughter. And then we had Dory Levitt and Jim Fulletter, who were great actors. They all went home and they did their homework. And it was, they took it. They helped me take it into a different direction. And they helped me grow. And that's the whole point. But yes, to answer your question and coming back to that, I gained a lot of respect. And I think me and him worked together. We grew a lot of, our friendship got closer. And if I could say that.
Absolutely.
Out of that respect. And I learned more that he really never had any acting training. He was more of an entrepreneur, always learning how to make money like we all did coming from the streets. You know, you had to go out and make money. When we came here in the United States, my father and them, we all had a job. We had to learn how to make money, how to earn. And Yaron is great at that. But his acting is, and it was, well, he has a music background as well. But that's what we learned. And now, to come back to that play, we've been working on it. What happened is we got hit by COVID. So we had to stop.
Uh-huh.
So the serious investors who wanted to do the off-Broadway show to move us further, I was lucky to give them the money back because it was great time, and I gave the money back. Nobody lost anything. When back in that day, everybody was losing. Anybody who invested in Broadway was off Broadway. They lost their money during that COVID. But I was able to give it back, and now it's amazing the process of what we do, because we thought, I mean, me, speaking for me, I thought the play was ready. I thought it was good. I thought there was more growth to go, but we could do it. 4 years later, Eve and I have been working on that play ever since. And I'm telling you now, the play is 100 times better than it ever was. And it's amazing how that process works. If we would have done it without the COVID, it would never have gotten to be where it is now in the stage of how we feel about the script. And so our goal with that is to, we're almost done with the second act, rewriting it, and then we're about to launch it on a major off-Broadway level, a really good-sized budget, and same people, same cast, and I'm really excited about it. And we have private readings, like Yaron. Remember, we have one reading that all the actors come to my house, they read the script, so we could hear it, and then I go back and work at it, and now I think we really have something even 100 times better when we do present it.
Absolutely. First of all, Frank, I have to say thank you so much for the kind words. I think you and I definitely, you know, Pete, this is the beautiful thing about the business and entertainment in general and working in theater, and you bond. You really get to know someone. You know, you really get to know them. I mean, you certainly get to know their artistic side, but you just get to know their person. You're just spending a lot of time together and doing the play. You know, I love how you're talking about the journey of the play. You know, Frank, I think it's interesting because you could showcase a work, you could do readings, right? And uh-huh. it's a development thing. You constantly get to develop something, which is something that you don't necessarily get to do with, like, you know, TV content or movie content. You know, you don't necessarily get to develop it and see how it grows, right? You want to talk to that a little bit? You've done a lot of TV work, a lot of movie work.
Yeah.
How would you compare the processes?
It's funny that you mentioned that because I was in at the wonderful, beautiful Tryon International Film Festival in Tryon, North Carolina, and I also took Dan with me. As he was more guest of the honor, and we had a wonderful time. And they asked me to teach a class with a wonderful musician, Sam Wayman, who was Nina Simone's brother. He actually played, like 80 years old. He played on the Strange Fruit album with her. I mean, he was so wise. And the three, I was my presentation, and the theme was Broadway transition to film. How does whether you're an actor or director, what's the difference of working theater and film, et cetera, et cetera. And then I just happened to, it was mine and Sam's workshop at that festival. And then Dan was in the audience. I said, well, you know what? Dan was like a mentor to me from a long time ago. We all grew up in the theater. I said, let's bring up Dan too, and we'll all talk about this. So I brought Dan, me, and Sam, and the audience went crazy about the transition because the process is so – the purpose of readings and that is just basically for development. That's all it is. And so it's not – when readings came into play, it was all about punching holes into the script, working that script. There's a lot of people who think the script is done on the first time. No, man. My first draft of a script, I want to throw up after I finish it. I think it's great that I can send it to my co-writer who's been my co-writer for 20 years. His name's Rick Martinson. He's out in Point Pleasant, New Jersey. Wonderful guy, wonderful writer. We're a great team. And I sent it to him with the first draft when I read the concept and stuff like that. I go, what do you think, Rick? And he goes, well, yeah, in about another year we'll be done. I went, no, we can't. I want it done now. But that's the process. It's the process. It takes, I mean, I'm in my 20th draft on stuff that people, you know, have read the first draft, and but I'm very careful of who I give my material to, because I want constructive criticism from people I can trust. I don't want people to say, well, if this was my thing, I would do it this way. Well, guess what? It's not your thing, you know? So let's critique on what's there, you know? And that's the art of critiquing. And I think, but the process for, I was taught old school, old guys, man, like Dan Loria, all these guys, not these old, but I'm just saying that, but they were my mentors. And man, we young kids, I was there. It was me, Woody Harrelson. It was Michael Imperarli. It was Dayton Calley. I mean, Dayton Calley became a very big, he's the actor, one of the main actors on Sons of Anarchy for 7 seasons. He did Deadwood for 2 years, 3 years, plus the movie, plus Fear of Walking Dead. Wonderful, wonderful actor. And I met him when I was coming up as a director, and he was such a wonderful actor. And we all grew up together, but our purpose was to punch holes into the script. And that's our job. That's our art of storytelling. And that's what we learn. And you know, you hear these people, oh, I wrote this in 3 days. Well, yeah, it kind of sounds like that too, you know. But, you know, so it's yeah, like, but sure. You're on, you were there. You're a prime example. There was times when I said, I remember one time Yaron and Dory, the actress, he was playing opposite, and there was a major catharsis type scene, a revealing scene at the second act, and we got in a debate over one word. What is it? We or us or me? Remember that, Yaron? And going through just that one word. And how did it sound better? What's the different meaning of it? What did it bring to us, to the table? And then we settled on the word that we all came together with. But that's the excitement of it. That's why I'm not an actor. I had to study acting because of when I was in school and stuff like that, because of my journey as a director. But I love the behind the scenes. I love the process that we go through. And the biggest, I'll tell you, the biggest thing I had to learn myself is when I was writing as a young man, is to stop. When I presented something, I would write something and I would send it to Dayton Calley. I would send it to Bobby Resco, my friend who directed Crash. I would say, what do you think? What do you think? Back then, I was hoping they would say, oh man, you're the greatest thing in the world. You're better than Quentin Tarantino. And once I stopped learning how to look for approval, then I got down to the work. And that's something we all have to learn. I don't want the approval. I don't want to say, oh, you're the best guy in the world. I learned to just do it for myself, the writing process. And writing is a craft. You have to learn how to do it and structure it. You have to learn formatting, where I think for a screenplay, it's a little bit easier formatting than a stage play. And, there's many theories of that. But that's, for me, that's the process of the script. is all we have to work off of. Go ahead.
No, well, no, that's very interesting. Unfortunately, we have a hard break. So we're talking with producer, director, and writer Frank M. Callow, and we'll be back with Live on Tape right after this. Each year, 5,000 people, including children, choke to death. LifeVac can stop these senseless tragedies. And it's so easy to use as well. Simply place the mask over the face and push and pull. You'll never regret having a LifeVac in your home or office. Please visit their website at www.lifevac.net today to protect you and your loved ones. Or you can call them at 877-LIFEVAC. That's 877-LIFEVAC.
I'm Ben Affleck, and I want to thank you for joining me and supporting Paralyzed Veterans of America.
I joined the Navy to serve my country. While parachuting with my platoon, my parachute didn't open, and I broke my neck.
Thanks to PVA, paralyzed veterans are getting specialized medical care and treatments, the jobs they want, and the accessible vehicles and homes they need.
I just don't think my family would be as happy as they are without the support that I received from Paralyzed Veterans of America.
Learn more at PVA.org.
And a happy Saturday afternoon here at WWDB AM 860 Talk Radio, a Beasley Media Group station. Pete Tribuco along with Tyler Conklin and, of course, Yuron Orbas, who is the co-host. But before we get back to our guest, let's talk about World Star Public Relations. And I'm telling you, where excellence really meets exposure. These are the people you want to go to. Are you ready to elevate your brand to new heights? Well, their team of dynamic public relations experts is here to make your story shine bright on the global stage. Whether you're a startup, an established artist business, or a rising star, they specialize in crafting narratives that actually do work. So they're your passport to the world of unparalleled visibility and success. So join the ranks of World Star Public Relations right now. Don't forget, the number 631-506-6600, 631-506-6600. And believe it or not, we get a lot of guests and incredible people from World Star. So we're really, really, really happy to have them on board and part of the team. Now, we got an amazing person, award-winning producer, director, and writer, Frank M. Callow, is with us. And I didn't mention this earlier. I did mention that he's worked with Robert De Niro and Madonna, Demi Moore, Mike Myers, Shelley Winters, Marlon Brando, Queen Latifah. We'll talk about the Queen Latifah movie. But also, I didn't mention this earlier, but The Believer, starring Ryan Gosling. Frank, tell us about that.
Oh, that was The Believer was, we shot that in 2000, and I was working for the studio at the time, Lionsgate, and I was pushing over, and it went to Seven Arts Theater studio, I got assigned to that. I was on another project, and I don't want to say the name of it because I knew it was terrible. I said, oh God, when it goes bad, they're gonna blame me. I'll be the scapegoat, and I don't want to do that. And it had a lot of major stars in it. It was all improv. And I said, there's no way they're going to do this. So they said, listen, there's another script called The Believer. It's in trouble. We'd like for you to go and check it out before it starts. And we're not sure about the whole production team there. So that's what I was in. I was sent in whenever a production was in problems. And when I came to the set, your show was in trouble. And I have a 99% track record, thank God, of bringing the production back on track for everybody. And sometimes you have to play hard, but you have to get the job done. And The Believer was a special treat for me. It really elevated my whole career and everybody involved, because it was Ryan Gosling's first actorial debut, major role. He came out of Disney, Disney World, that whole Disney Mickey Mouse Club, and also he was playing young Hercules at the time.
Yeah,
and The Believer is about a skinhead who's a Jewish boy who lost his faith, and he joined this neo-Nazi group, contemporary times, and within that journey he regained his faith, and it kind of fits even till today in the world today. It still has a major theme on it. And the studio did not want Ryan Gosling. They said, well, he's a young Hercules guy. He's he's a Disney kid. He's not going to play a skinhead, And Henry Bean, who was a wonderful director, and it was his Henry Breen was a wonderful writer. Him and his wife wrote Desperately Seeking Susan and Basic Instinct. And I think he got a big payout from doing Basic Instinct 2. And that's what he used some of that money to upstart The Believer, the film. He wrote it as well. And he loved Ryan. So I met Henry. We got along so well. And we had a fight for Ryan because they said, well, can't you get this person? Can't you get this person? And I said, listen, we could get Billy Zane and he'll be our star. And that'll be our star leverage because Billy Zane at the time was coming off of Titanic. And so he was the major star of the project. And we also had another lady involved. But then that didn't work out. And we had to bring another. So Teresa Russell stepped in.
Uh-huh.
And I said, those are our stars. Let's go with that. And they still, hemmed and hawed. And finally they agreed, and we did it. And when I saw Ryan work, and I did second unit directing on that too, as to all the fight scenes and stuff like that, the subway season, and also the and producing all that stuff. When Ryan came on, he was amazing. I just looked at him when I met him for the first time, and I saw him and we did rehearsals, and I said, this kid's incredible, man. He thought, hey, this kid's really incredible. So it launched his career and launched, and then it took me from from the minors to the majors, if I could say that analogy. And it took Henry from all of us. Jim Denault was our DP. He's shooting Yellowstone now, and he also had, I think he did Baby Boy or that movie with that low budget movie about the transgender girl, beautiful film. But he did that before. It was a small low budget film. So it kind of was great for all of us. And then we had production headaches because once we got in, we were in rehearsals. We all agreed. They said, okay, let's go with Ryan. We all agree. We're all in production, pre-production. And then one of our major star at the time, the female lead, the weekend before we were start shooting, studio calls me up and says, so-and-so just dropped out. I said, what are you talking about? We're shooting her Monday. We're shooting her all next 2 weeks. And he goes, well, she decides that she doesn't want to be head of a neo-Nazi group, a mother of a Nazi. I said, well, we rehearsed it for a month. She's just letting us know that now?
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, geez.
Yes. Wow. And so what happened was then they said, we came to agreement. I said, listen, man, we're going to have to push this back a week now. We're all ready to start shooting Monday. We're going to have to push it back and look for another star. And they did. A week later, the studio found us, Teresa Russell, and she came in and she just blew me away. She knew, and it was a big role. And she knew every single line within the week. She knew the character. That's what actors do. That's what I was telling about with your aunt earlier and the cast of To Life is they can lift it to when they do their own homework, they can lift it to a whole level. And us people in the background, we don't have to worry. We say, okay, I got that taken care of. Let's make sure we take this taken care of. But what happened, everybody thinks, okay, you settled that problem. You got Teresa Russell. Now you guys can go. But for what happened, we settled the acting problem, but we lost every single location that we had locked in because it was it was like a domino effect. So I had to put on a second whole unit location team. I had two departments running. One's out scouting where we're going to shoot the next day, and one's on set while we're shooting that day. And that's how it was for 30 days, 5 days a week, And it was, but I told Henry, I told Ryan, I said, I told Henry, the creative team, I said, listen, man, you guys go on shoot. I'll take care of this. You have any problems, you come to me. And that's how we worked. We just worked off each other. Everybody was trying to make this happen. And then afterwards we finished it. It was grueling, but I loved it. I was where I wanted to be. And now I realized why the studio had me there, because when you're going to production, those are the people you want that can to save your production. Because if you had an inexperienced producer coming in or director in a situation like that, you would lose the whole thing. And that means your money, all the money that, it's gone, it's invested, you're out, And so that's why it really helped me step up my game. But I was loving it because I was second unit directing. I was like producing it, and I was calling the shots, and I was at my game. And what happened is the film actually got made. And then we ended up winning the Sundance, the Audience Award for Sundance. And then we also, believe it or not, we also won the Berlin Film Festival Nazi based. And Ryan went on to do, and the same studio that did not want him signed up him for Murder by Number and The Notebook.
Wow.
And that's what kicked him off over the edge. The Notebook really did, I think. That's my opinion. But Believer is one of his classic films that he did. And the best thing for that whole purpose, and I'll tell you now, is like 10 years later, I met Ryan and everybody out in Sundance again. And we're at a bar and we're talking the same story like we're talking now. I said, yeah, remember when so-and-so dropped out and we lost every single location? And they looked at me, the actors looked at me and go like, what, when did that happen? Uh-huh. I said, oh, and you know what?
Clueless.
I'm going to keep that for myself. You know, I said, because they had no idea what was going on, because I kept them going as a director and a producer. And that's what you do as a producer. You protect your production and you support them. And when you have good people around you, all you want to do is support it. And everybody's working to make it happen. And that's the most important thing. And I've learned, whenever there's any production headaches, baby, just work through it. Work through it. Those are your words. Work through it. There's nothing you can do. Work through it. And there's no ego. There's no power trip. No one's the boss. The director's not the boss. The actor's not the boss. The producer's not the boss. There's just, we're all there working together. And that's when I left the studio for my own company, FMC Productions. That's my motto. If I want people around me that we could all just get, you know, I don't want the headaches of a star saying, oh, I need to have this package. I need to have 18 entourage people around me. Oh, I need my breaks. No. When I talk to an actor nowadays, I'm in a good position to say this, whether you're a star or not, is when you take this job, take the responsibility for it. I'm not looking for, oh, I want to do it this way. I want to do it my way. Or I don't want to listen to anybody else. I don't want to show up for rehearsals. Or, you know, I'm going to bring my boyfriend and girlfriend. I don't want that headache, because I still believe in the work that we were talking about earlier today, is that when I was a kid, learning how to do the breakdown of script, I still believe in the craft.
Wow.
And I want all my people around me to understand that. And I still, and that's what, that's my childlike nature. And that wonder that I still have that keeps me going and keeps me excited to keep going. You know, I believe that work on your craft, people. That's your goal. That's all we have. It's like Ron's building a business. You're building a business, Pete, but you invest in that business. Well, in our business, it's you.
Yeah.
Whether you're a director, writer, or actor, or musician, that's your business. Built it up, man.
Yeah.
And I learned a long time ago from a very good entertainment lawyer, this is called show business. It's not called show art. Learn the business, pay for your art.
Now, this is true. This is absolutely true. So just for those of you that are just joining us, we are talking with the award-winning producer, director, and writer, Frank M. Callow. I know Ron's got about 2 minutes before break. Ron, you have a question for Frank?
Yeah, Frank, you know, you and I had sat down, and we'll probably continue this when we come back, but we had sat down with Dan Loria and just a bunch of guys, and you came up through the ranks. You know, we had gone to a Bobby Moresco workshop event, if you recall, and we went to a restaurant, we all sat down, and I remember sitting, hearing you and Dan and other people that were there talking about back in the good old days when you were with Woody Harrelson. I want you to talk about that, what it was like. You guys, like, lived in the Times Square area, if I remember. You guys were all about the theater scene, right, and coming up together?
Yeah, we yes, sir. We built up Theater Row. Theater Row at that time was nothing. Well, I didn't. I was just a young kid coming up. These guys did, like the older guys, and I was fortunate. Like Joseph Pabst, one of my mentors was Vincent Gugliotti, who Dan knows very well, and Dayton too. He was Dayton's mentor as well. We came up together. He's from the Joseph Papp Theater back when he's the one who did That Championship Season, A Chorus Line, Two Gentlemen of Verona. So he took me under his wing. And that's a long story. That's another story. But he took me on his wing, and he was always, but he was patient with us. He was patient. But Theater Row was like, if you guys remember, it was like Drug City, man. It was like pimps.
Oh yeah, it was seedy.
Yeah,
it was seedy. And you guys were. Yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead. Finish.
No, I was going to say, you know, I mean, I remember you telling me. I had this wonderful imagery of you guys just coming up, all these soon to be great actors, directors, playwrights, you guys huddled up, you know, living in, yes, definitely a seedy part of Manhattan, sort of coming up in the ranks, you guys sharing, right? I think, did you share like a space for for a little while as well.
Yeah. Well, Dan still has that space. Dan still has that space, and we used to live there. I mean, I had my own place, but then I used to hang there all the time. And the roommates were Woody Harrelson, Robbie Moran, Dan Loria. There was Ed O'Neill was coming through. I mean, there was Michael Imperiali. Everybody was just cast coming through. But see, that's the beauty about it is you didn't know them. You didn't know. We were all trying to make something happen. And I ended up going to NYU film school based on a play that I did that was successful back then. And I had the money to do it. I was grad school in the Tisch program, but they were the undergrad class was Spike Lee and the Coen brothers.
Oh, wow.
And we all came up together. And John Killick, who is one of really great producers, he ended up teaming up with Spike for a long time. But we were all palling around. So it was funny for me because I had to adapt from that crowd, that theater crowd that you mentioned you're on. And then I got into, I really wanted to always direct film. And
yeah.
I jumped into a film crowd. And it was a whole different scene. It was a whole different language. It was like, I got accepted at the NYU, and I also got accepted at Columbia. But Columbia was too aesthetic. It was too much. I already had that background from learning the craft in the theater. So I needed technical. I needed nuts and bolts and get out and do it. And that's what NYU, for me at that time, offered.
So basically, NYU was your ticket. But I can't believe that you were actually sitting and living with all these fantastic artists. You know, it's just amazing. So, you know, for those of you just joining, we are talking with award-winning producer, director, and writer Frank M. Callow. And we'll be back with Frank right after these messages. Each year, 5,000 people, including children, choke to death. LifeVac can stop these senseless tragedies. It's so easy to use also. Simply place the mask over face, push and pull. You'll never regret having a LifeVac in your home or office. Please visit LifeVac.net today to protect you and your loved ones. Or you can call them at 877-LIFEVAC. That's 877-LIFEVAC.
I spent a lot of time in the garage, but even more time in the rain and mud. In 95, I helped tow your moving trailer. And in 09, it was sparks from me, your chains, dragging behind your truck that accidentally started a wildfire.
Spark a change, not a wildfire. Visit SmokeyBear.com, brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
Hello, everybody. Merry Christmas. And, of course, Happy Hanukkah. Live on tape with Pete Tribuco on WWDB AM 860 Talk Radio. Yes, the holidays are actually Christmas is only 3 or 4 days away. So get those gifts if you haven't already done so. And we just got an incredible guest with us today. We've got award-winning producer, director, and writer Frank M. Callow. You got to know this, basically. He's a seasoned producer. He's done reality television, episodes, film, theater. You just mentioned it. We talked about The Believer, starring Ryan Gosling. He's worked with artists like Robert De Niro, Madonna, Demi Moore, Mike Myers, Shelley Winters, Marlon Brando, Queen Latifah, Dan Glover, of course, Danny Glover, and many, many more. And let's go back to what we just discussed, basically, with Queen Latifah. So we're talking about the movie The Cookout, of which you were second unit director on that. Frank, tell us about that experience.
That was fun, man. That was so much fun. You know, it's like, again, I was coming off The Believer, and I was the seasoned producer then, and I stepped in the first base, and now I was like a seasoned starter in the game, and they said, "Here, you want to do The Believer?" The Cookout, which was like I think 2003, 2004.
Yeah.
But the problem was you have to understand, I keep saying problems, but you know, that's what producers and directors and writers are. We're problem solvers as well.
Yep.
And you have to be, because you work through the problem, and because there's always headaches, there's always production headaches, and it's cost effective, especially on film more than theater. Because every day you roll that camera, man, you're spending $100,000 a day nowadays. And there's nothing you can do. You don't show up for work. Your crew's still getting paid, you know? So, anyway, so The Cookout was they were not going to green light it unless, because she was doing Taxi at the same time we needed to shoot it.
Uh-huh.
And it was with, that's the one that, that was a bigger role for her with Jimmy Fallon. And so what I had to do is, and they said, we're not going to green light this unless she signs off and you guys can work out a schedule. So I sat down, I called up the producer from Taxi and the AD. And I sat him in a room. I said, here's when we need her. I only need her 4 days. Give me 4 days out of your long schedule. When can I have her on a weekday? And so we worked it out. We said no here, no here, no there. And then we finally locked her in for 3-4 days that we needed her. And then I went back to the studio and they said, fine, let's see what if we can cast it. So they were, once she signed on, boom, they greenlit it. But the problem is now it's called the cookout, which means that we had every single actor there for 4 weeks every day in a backyard because the cookout took place in 1 day at a cookout.
Uh-huh.
And we had, it was Farrah Fawcett's last movie, Danny Glover. We had the two twins, comedy twins. We had the SNL crowd. We had two comedians from there. We had Frankie Faison, a wonderful actor. I mean, I he's another great actor that him and I worked together so well afterwards. We became friends. We had Jennifer Lewis from the Joseph Papp Theater. We had all this tremendous cast in, and I said, oh man, this is going to be crazy. And I was responsible for scheduling the shoot. But to get everybody's, we had Ja Rule and then we got in a fight with 50 Cent on set one day. And it was we had everybody, but once we got everything, once I locked everything in, everybody agreed to it. I said, here it is, man. It was one of the best shoots I had. Queen Latifah was so much fun. That Frankie Faison, that whole crew was so much fun. We shot in Jersey. I used to shoot a lot in New Jersey because of the tax incentive program. And we shot all over through New Jersey and it was one of the best shoots I was in. And then I was in charge of all the second unit. I shot all the basketball scenes. I shot all the fight scenes. I shot the stunts with Queen Latifah coming down the sky window and stuff. Uh-huh. But it was such a fun shoot. But I scheduled it for 30 days, but the studio said, no, you can't. You're only going to give you 24 days. I said, are you kidding me? We have a first-time director. And his name was Un. And he's a wonderful musician as well, a rapper in that world. But we did it. So we had I had two units going at the same time and we had, big job, but Queen Latifah, she was the gem. The first day we were shooting in Jersey City Park, tough neighborhood. We were in a tough neighborhood. And then of course we had the crowds and then Queen Latifah, there was a little scuffle going on and Queen Latifah stepped on that. I said, man, this is going to blow up.
Uh-huh.
So I called, cause she had her offices right down the street from there. So I called her over. I said, man, Queen, I think you better get over here. And she got over here. She came to the set and she says, listen, everybody. And she yelled out, this is my movie. This is my set. I am the executive producer and nothing goes down without my say. So everybody please shut up and let Frank and everybody, my whole team work. And after that was the first day of shoot. After that, everybody came up to me and said, thank God you called her, man. I said, I know. it would have escalated. It was another issue involved with that. But anyway, so she was so wonderful to work with. And I also did another movie that won the Tribeca Film Festival with Here and There. It was called Here and There. And that's a beautiful, romantic movie, if you guys ever want to see. And then it was sponsored by Serbia government.
That was with Cyndi Lauper?
Yep, Cyndi Lauper. We shot all her scenes in my apartment, and she was she was a blessing. And David Thornton, her husband, is a wonderful actor. You see his work a lot in our homeland, and he was the main star of it. And he brought Cyndi in, and her and I got along so well. And Cyndi was so great to work with. And when we were finished shooting all her stuff that day, I said, so what are you up to now, Cyndi? What are you going to do now? She says, I don't know. I got offered a music for some Broadway show called Kinky Boots or something. What's dragging me back to when you said in the beginning, when we're with Woody and with everybody, that's, you don't know. We don't know what's going to happen. In the end, we try our best. We try our best. And then in the end, and you'll understand this, Yaron, you appreciate this. In the end, it's just you're dicing your hand, you throw it on the table, and you pray that that movie works or that play works, you know, and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't, you know, for some, whatever reasons, you know, so.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I wanted to say, I was looking at some of the cast on The Cookout. I remember actually working, I don't know what his role was. His name is Willem Lewis. His name is Wayne. I actually ended up doing a series with him. You know, it's such a small world in our business, right? There's only, you know, like rolling the dice. You know, you mentioned rolling the dice and getting to tell a story. Hopefully you get to tell it again. And usually as you go up, or sometimes as you go down in your career, you end up bumping into the same people because it's a very few select crazy people that really push hard through this business. And whether it's good times or bad times, they stick around. Right, Frank?
Yeah, exactly right. Exactly right. I mean, I look at my class now, my NYU class, or you, my theater class. I was at my undergrad's at the Goodman Theater in Chicago. That was the most elite directed school in the country at the time. And they don't have those kind of schools anymore because most schools are for acting or production design or writing or, you know, but rarely was there a school, you know, like, as big as the Goodman Theater in Chicago, strictly geared for directors. And even if you went into the acting program, you graduated as a director back then. And then, so that was a long time ago. That was my undergrad. And then that took me to here, to New York. And I'll tell you a funny story. When I was such a young director and I was naive and stupid and think I could do anything in the world. And I met Dan and Dan and I, we all were in a theater, you know, small theater, building sets every night, walking home through the ghetto every night, you know, stepping over crackheads. Mm. Pray for your life, mm-hmm. you know, going home at night, saying, why am I doing this? Time. Why am I sitting here doing this? And then anyway, but one time Dan was a star on One Life to Live, I think, and he knew Mary Jo Slater, who's a wonderful casting director, and he said, listen, Frank, I'm going to help you. You know, you want to get in a film, this will help. We'll get you on a crew for One Life to Live. And come on in. They want you to meet. So he takes me in, and the first AD comes up and goes, and Dan says, so-and-so, this is Frank. This is the kid I was telling you about. He's looking, you know, he goes, we could start him off as a PA or something like that. And then I looked around the set and everything was happening. The sets were being built. Lights were going up. Actors were rehearsing lines. I looked around there. I go, no, you know what? What I really want to do is direct. The AD looked at me and went, well, that's not going to happen. Goodbye. And then Dan took me outside and he smacked me, literally, physically smacked me in the back of the head and said, what the heck's wrong with you, man? You got to get in the door. I said, but Dan, all I want to do is direct. He goes, yeah, but not now. You're not directing now. You got to get in the door. So I had to learn how to start, you know?
But
I got so moved. I was so young. Thank God I was naive. If I did it now, I would never have a way to get back, you know? But now it's like, but I was so moved and so excited by what was going on around me. And I just wanted to direct it. And that's how I grew up. When I was 5 years old, I knew that's what I wanted to do. And I have five sisters, and I used to line them up, and I made them read plays, and they would walk off on me. And I think that's how I learned how to deal with actors, because they would walk off and say, this is stupid. I go, you can't. I'm the director. You can't walk away. And they did. I go, well, shit, now how am I going to get them back? You know? So now I'm pretty good at keeping actors with me. You know?
Mm-hmm. That's a really good question, basically, with regards to actors. We got about a minute to a minute and a half before the break. Obviously, you got to deal with actors, and sometimes it's hard. You know, I mean, depends on the person. How does that work with you? I mean, how do you get past the ego sometimes in order to get them to do what you want?
You just hit it on the head. We all have to get past our egos. As a director doesn't know everything. People think the director knows everything. Or, I might be a director. You see these young kids, even me, when I told you that story, I thought directors are everything. They're not, man. Either are actors, either are producers, either are writers. It's a collaboration. Yaron and I worked on a scene one time, and I said, no, I think this way. And we worked it. He goes, Frank, please, let me just try it one way. I want to show you something. And he did. I said, let's look at it. And he did it, and we put the other actor in there, and they did it together. And I said, yeah, that's it. So that's the collaboration. It's not like, it must be this way, it must be that way. Get rid of the egos. I think for most of us, sometimes when you get there, getting there is one thing. Staying there is another on our level of business. I mean, because, you know, people forget where they come from, man. And people forget that they think they're above the law. And if you look at the people that get in trouble, like we all been in trouble at points, but you know, people who really get in trouble or scandalous or whatever, all of a sudden they find God, you know, they find a root. Mm.
That's true. Know? That's true.
It's like, you've got to come down to that. And that's what, and I'm in a position now. There's some actors who I would never work with again. You know, stars. You know, I would just say no.
Okay. When at that point, basically, we're going to be taking a break. Yeah, I've had people on actually talked about stuff like that, and this is a positive show. So, yeah. Bottom line is, we are with an incredible writer, director, producer, just a great guy, Frank M. Gallo, and we'll be back with Live on Tape right after this. Each year, 5,000 people, including children, choke to death. LifeHack can stop these senseless tragedies. And it's so easy to use as well. Simply place the mask over the face and push and pull. You'll never regret having a LifeHack in your home or office. Please visit their website at www.lifehack.net today to protect you and your loved ones. Or you can call them at 877-LIFEVAC. That's 877-LIFEHACK.
Hi, this is Kelsey Grammer. When military service members head into battle, none are expected to face the enemy alone, but many return home and become isolated as they struggle with the visible and invisible wounds of war. It can be difficult knowing how to overcome that challenge and rekindle bonds similar to those formed in the military. Wounded Warrior Project supports these injured veterans through their recoveries by connecting them with fellow warriors and their communities. No one should fight this battle alone. Join us at WoundedWarriorProject.org.
And happy holidays to all of you. This is the Christmas show. I know it's 4 days away, but unfortunately, our next show will probably be the New Year's show as we go along here. But we're just having a ball here. We have got a great, great guest. And, of course, Tyler Conklin is the producer, as always. And, of course, we have our guest co-host, which is Ron Urbus, who is also an actor in distinction himself. We have Frank M. Gallo with us. No, not the Gallo that was killed in Vinny, you know, even though the name is kind of close there. But he's an amazing producer. He's done so much stuff, reality television episodes, theater stuff. You might remember him doing the cookout with Queen Latifah and, of course, the award-winning The Believer with Ryan Gosling. And, it's funny how you guys know each other really well and you work extremely well together. And I guess this is a question for both of you, Ron, as well as Frank. What do you do when you got a director or when you have an actor that you just can't deal with? Every day it's a problem, it's an issue, it's something. When that could be a director, that could be whatever. And what do you do in order to keep your sanity?
You want me to go first, Your Honor?
Yes, why don't you go first?
Okay. Yeah. Well, in my position, it really depends on where you're at. And this is something, that's actually a very good question in a different way because it's a learning question. For young directors or actors or anybody at any level having this question. And it happens all the time. It depends on where your position is. If your position is with the studio and you're directing and they say, okay, we're going to do Uran's movie. He's directing it. Okay, we don't really want him as a director, but we want somebody else. But hey, let's go with it. Just like they treated us on The Believer, you know? But we had a season people around us and who was ready to step up to the level with that project and the other projects I had. But it depends on your position. Now, if you have a problem with certain actors, and I have a problem where an actor wouldn't come out of the trailer because they had a headache that day. Well, our payroll is not going to say, well, everybody's off for the day because he has a headache, you know? And the question is this, it's if your position is with a studio you got to understand film. When you shoot an actor for the first day and you have to have that actor for the second day, the second, third week, fourth week down the line, you're committed. You committed that person to film already. And sometimes if the star says, you know, I've seen this happen. If it's not stars, but well-known actors, let's say, they're a problem. They don't show up or they go out at night, or they don't want to listen to what you're saying. They don't know the lines. And you tell the studio, as a producer, I said, listen, man, I learned it's called the studio heads. I said, listen, man, you guys deal with this. You guys call this actor up and you tell him what you want to do. Sometimes if the actor goes, it's big enough and they studio says, well, this is a bad investment. So who goes? It's like the coaches in the basketball team or in an NFL team. They fire the coach because they're not going to fire the star because you're already committed to the star for the contract. Uh-huh. So it depends on your position. Now opposed to independent. Now, if it's my production company, it's my film, and I have independent financing, then I have more control and control stay. But the same theory happens. It still has just the same is if I start committing this actor to the work, especially in film, then I'm almost ready to you know make sure I have that strong commitment 100%. Now, if something goes wrong, what I do learn to do in my budgets is I always have a budget allocated for recasting in case something happens. I have to reshoot something if I have to replace an actor, which happens, whether the actor's sick or that's why you have understudies on stage or whether the actor just doesn't want to do it. But, I mean, look at Apocalypse Now. Apocalypse Now did not originally star Martin Sheen. It was just at a point where they had another actor, Francis Ford Coppola says, man, this actor, I'm shooting his actor every day and he's just not getting it. So he replaced him.
Yeah.
And he brought in Marlon Brando. He brought in Marlon Brando to play the guy he did in Apocalypse Now. But he had no idea Marlon Brando gained that much weight. He thought he was the Marlon Brando that he always knew. And so Marlon Brando showed up in the Philippines and he had all this weight on. And Francis Ford Coppola says, oh my God, what is this? So that's why he shot him. He adapted and shot him in shadows.
Yeah.
Which actually aesthetically kind of worked creatively for the project. You know, that's why he was shot in black and on shadow. That was the reasoning behind it. But it's like you work, but then at the same time, even in Lord of the Rings, I think Viggo was recast. He was brought in because somebody else was playing Viggo. I mean, playing Viggo Mortensen's role.
Uh-huh.
And then they brought Viggo in. They brought him in too, because sometimes it just doesn't work. The chemistry doesn't work. And you always put that in your contract. It's positioning in your contract. Who has the final say? Who has this? Who has this if this happens? I've learned a long time ago when I was doing theater from the same theater group people. I used to be like the director when an actor would throw a fit on stage or something like that in rehearsal. I'll go, oh, what's wrong? Are you okay? Everything all right? Oh, you want me to move that chair for you? And then one of my main mentors said to me, stop doing that, man. You know how embarrassing that is for you? Just walk away. Take attention away from the problem. When an actor gets up and says, and throws a chair, walk away. Say, okay, I'm working on this today. We're going to work on this now. We'll leave that guy alone. We're not going to work with him today. You know, take the tension away from him. And all of a sudden, we all want attention. That's why we're in the business. So all of a sudden, that attention is no longer there for them, and they kind of calm down themselves. Kind of like a kid. You're dealing with a kid, and you have to put him in timeout. Mm-hmm. You're like a kindergarten teacher. Mm-hmm. But it's a tricky position. But I'm also fortunate, and Yaron knows this about me too, is I'm a loyal person, and I also seek respect. If I'm not here, you don't have to like me, you don't have to hate me, you do whatever, but you must respect it. I'm going to be here and I'm going to do my work, I'm going to respect you, and we can grow together. And sometimes thank God it does work, and sometimes it just doesn't. You know, and sometimes you just leave each other alone and get to work, and just he or she does her job, and you do your job, and you stay away from each other, but you get committed on the film, you know. And my theory is this: an actor says, "I don't feel like he'll never do that. This character with my character, if I write, I say, well, what are you talking about? I wrote the character, you know. I know what that character will want, you know. So that's ammunition, you know. And the thing I said, but at the same time, I'll say, okay, you know what? You have this luxury of film, but not in theater. Is let's shoot it both ways."
Yeah.
Okay. We got the time. I'll shoot it your way. Let's shoot it my way. And then let's see what happens. And the editor room will tell you. I'd rather have that much footage going into the editor room than not enough footage.
Yeah.
Or enough tapes. Because the more I have in the editing room, the more I can shape the story. And that's where the real work comes down to in film, is in the editing process. When I was a young kid, I used to think, oh, filming was great. The beat on set was the best thing in the world. No, it's not, man. That's the job. That's fun. That's fun. You know, you're offset. People look at you and say, oh, look at that guy running around. Now what?
Yeah.
The editing, as I got older, editing process to me is like, my God, that's the best that's the best place in the world, man, for me. You know, that's when your story really becomes...
Well, you got to be technical.
Saying, Frank.
Go ahead.
Yeah, there's an old saying, Frank, right? There's three stories in as far as TVs and movies, right, television movies, right? There's the writing. There's a story in the writing, right? There's a story in the editing, right? And then, like, what's the third one? Like, the actor. The actors that you put, what they bring to the story.
I hate to break you guys up, but we only got 2 minutes left. Now, less than a minute and a half at this point. Definitely we can talk more about that. But websites. Do you have any websites where people can find you or anything that's going? We got about maybe 45 seconds. If you can give us that pertinent information, I know our listeners would love to hear about that.
I use two. I use only two. I have one that design that was created by Uran's consulting company as well. It's FMCfilm.com.
Yes.
FMCfilm.com and also IMDb Pro.
That sounds good.
Those are the sites I use.
Well, listen, thank you so much, Frank. We do appreciate it. And on behalf of myself and Tyler and, of course, Uran, hey, happy holidays, everybody. And we'll talk to you again next week.
Thanks, Frank.